Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller again today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry will be back in tomorrow for the annual visit by Santa Claus. You'll want to have your children close at hand. That's who Santa talks to. That's tomorrow. Today, 10 fun ways to measure Wisconsin seasons you might never have thought of with Dennis Prusik of Green Bay, who publishes and edits the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for home and cabin. Dennis, it's a pleasure to have you with us again this year.
Hi, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
On the calendar, it says that Dennis Prusik and his friends ply the waters and woods of northern Wisconsin and beyond, printing for our enjoyment the best of their seasonal notes of fishing, hunting, berry picking, birding, gardening, wildflower, and weather lore. It's quite an arrangement there.
Sounds impressive, doesn't it?
It does. It does. You have convinced a number of your good friends to give you their material each year for, what is it now, 31 years?
It's been a long time. And yes, I'm really beholden to a large group of very dedicated nature watchers around the state, mostly northern Wisconsin. And what they do is they're very observant. They're outside a lot, and they pay attention to the weather. They pay attention to what the plants and animals are doing. And even more importantly, they write it down. And then what's really great is that once a month they send me their findings, and I collect it and keep it along with my own journal that I keep.
Mm-hmm. Phenology, can you define it?
Yes. Phenology is a science. It's a study of nature, particularly how plants and animals have their lives intimately shaped by the geology and geography of a given place, in this case the study's Wisconsin, and especially their lives are intimately shaped by the seasonal pattern of weather.
Dennis Prusik is our guest, and if you'd like to join in, the number is 800-642-1234. Dennis was kind enough to donate 5 copies of the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar. So to the first 5 people with questions about phenology, as just previously described, we'll send you a copy of the calendar. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. We have 5 of them, so you can get on the air fairly quickly if you'd like to give a call right now. Let's talk about 10 fun ways to measure Wisconsin seasons that we may not have thought of before. What's number one?
Well, I tell you, I think maybe I have to kind of set this up so it makes sense.
All right.
The way most people think of the seasons, I think if you were to ask people, when's the first day of winter, well, they would have thought that maybe 2 days ago was the first day of winter, the winter solstice, because probably when they were watching the nightly weather, the weather guy proudly proclaimed that that today was the first official day of winter, completely ignoring the fact that we've had snow on the ground and ice on the lakes for 3 to 4 weeks already. And so typically that's when you try and tie down what the seasons look like and get a first day of it, everybody kind of falls back to the solstices and the equinox, which is an Earth-Sun relationship, and it has to do with sunlight, and I think everybody knows that the days now after the winter solstice start to get longer again, and then over the course of the year they'll be the longest at the summer solstice, and then they start to get shorter again until they reach the winter solstice next year when you have the shortest day of the year.
So is what you're saying then that we should really regard the beginning of winter as about Thanksgiving?
Well, you know what? What I'm saying is this. All the elements of weather are important. Sunlight is certainly important, but especially here in Wisconsin, temperature is tremendously important because that part of the year when it freezes, water locks up everything. The rain turns to snow. The lakes turn to ice. Frost goes in the ground. And the way temperature seasonal pattern works is it's organic. It's free-flowing. It changes every year. And as soon as the frost comes out of the ground, those first plants are not going to say, well, we can't grow. It's not the spring equinox. They're going to say, hip, hip, hooray, the frost is out of the ground, and they're going to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And so plants and animals here in Wisconsin especially really are shaped by winter, by that freezing. And so when it starts to freeze every year, that changes. Where you live in southern Wisconsin, then when you look by temperature, you can understand why winter is such a different thing in the Madison area than it is in the Minocqua area.
Mm-hmm.
When you look by temperature, when you go by the solstice and that sunlight, they say, well, winter is the same in Minocqua as it is in Madison. It doesn't start until the 21st, and it ends when the spring equinox comes. And it only is 3 months long. And I'm sure people living in northern Wisconsin will tell you, winter is a lot longer than 3 months.
It sure is. Now, you mentioned southern Wisconsin, where I'm living in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Is the calendar somehow adjusted for various locations around the state?
Well, there is one adjustment that I do have in here. I have the sunrise and sunset times, and I have the average high and low temperature and the record high and low temperature. And I've used Green Bay as the phenological center, so I use their data. And then I have adjustments to that printed across the top of the bottom half of each month. And so you can, if you live, for example, in Hayward or Madison on December, you would add 1 minute to the sunrise sunset, or to the sunrise, 10 minutes to the sunset time, and you would add 2 degrees to the average temperatures that are printed in the calendar, and that would be your adjustments.
Okay. Dennis Prusik is our guest. He's the publisher and edits the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin. Calendar represents a 31-year study of the wild and not-so-wild animals and plants in the state. And as promised, the first calendar is going to be going out to Dave in Augusta. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I've got a question. When I lived in southern Wisconsin for many, many years, during the peak of the summer, January 21st, the first day of summer, it seemed like the sun would set probably about 9 or 9:10. Since I've lived in northern Wisconsin, sometimes it seems like it's 20 minutes to 10. Now, is that just my imagination, or is the daylight longer in the northern part of the state as compared to the southern part of the state?
Well, I tell you what, it's not your imagination. You're a good observer. This has to do... It has to do with kind of a lot of things, but essentially the particular shape of the Earth being round, and then it rotates on a tilted axis. And in the summertime, that's when that northern part of the axis, and we live in the northern hemisphere, that's the time it's pointing towards the sun. And because of that round shape, it means that the days are longer during the summertime the further you go north, until you get to the point where, if you're far enough north, of course, you have the midnight sun in summertime, because essentially that axis is almost pointing at the sun, so the sun never sets up there. So you have a small amount of that happening from the change from Madison to, let's say, Minocqua. And conversely, however, though, everything changes in the wintertime, because now it's the southern axis that points towards the sun. That means the northern axis is the furthest away. And because of that, the days are noticeably longer in Madison than they are in the northern part of Wisconsin.
Right. I've got one more question for you, sir. Sometimes when there's a heavy frost in the morning, and as the sun comes up, you'll see what my mother-in-law used to call a hoar frost. It's on the trees.
Right.
It's just a beautiful, that's the most prettiest time of the winter.
And what was the question?
Well, it was a statement. This is the prettiest time of the winter.
Okay. Well, you know what? It does bespeak of a time of year in which you have that the moisture, the temperature going back and forth around the freezing mark, because what happens is that as it goes down below, it kind of squeezes that moisture out. And so we get a warm-up of temperature that there will put a lot of moisture in the air, and that at night When the sun goes down and the temperatures plummet, all that moisture will rest on those branches, and they'll freeze. And the result is that beautiful hoarfrost when you get the conditions just right.
You bet.
Dave, we're going to put you on hold and let Dave Potratz get your name and address, and we'll get a calendar off to you. And thanks very much for that call. Let's go to Terry in Abrams next. Hello, Terry. What's on your mind today?
Yes. I'd like to ask Dennis if he, through the years of compiling the data, seen where the animal plants have been affected by global warming.
Well, that's a great question. In fact, I had it asked me so many times because I give lots of presentations to groups and that, and it seems everybody wants to know if my study goes along with global warming. And so I took some time and I kind of looked through everything. And the first thing that I thought I would find when I looked for evidence, I thought, well, you know, it's going to show up in the springtime. It just seemed to make the most sense to me at the time. And so I looked for the springtime data, and my data did show that there was a gradual warming trend, mostly for plants and not for birds. Not so much for birds. And but when I continued to look throughout the year, I found that the greatest change wasn't in the springtime. It was in the fall and in the winter. And there's where I saw the biggest change. So I started delving more into all the information about global warming and started reading up about it. And everything that the scientists said then played out exactly when you look at where the temperatures change in global warming. It's mainly supposed to be a warming at night. That is, these greenhouse gases are supposed to hold in these temperatures at night from plummeting so low, and not so much about building up the temperatures during the daytime. And spring and summer are mostly daytime seasons, and fall and winter are, you might think of, as nighttime seasons. So the biggest effect, just like they predicted, would be in the fall and the winter. And yes, I've seen it in my data.
All right, Terry, thanks very much for the call. We'll get a calendar off to you. We'll put you on hold so that Dave Potratz can talk with you. And let me ask you, Dennis, we talked about the one of the 10 fun ways to measure the seasons that we may not have thought of before, and that had to do with the first day of winter in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And what would be another one?
Well, okay, the way I look at it is for here in Wisconsin, I'm thinking in terms of temperature. So what I'm looking for is for the first day of winter is I'm looking for when freezing temperatures start to dominate. And I even have it in my calendar as one of the 23 phenological events to look for. It would be in November. The second one is that first winter front. So I'm looking for 4 days in which the low temperature is cold enough that it's going to freeze most of the day. And when you look for it, you can actually see it coming. And accordingly, things react. Precipitation now becomes predominantly snow. This happened in the state this year. For most of the state, it happened that first weekend in December when temperatures plummeted. And then a few days later, we got that tremendous snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
You got that 14 inches in Madison. We got it in Green Bay. I just talked with a guy. For the life of me, I wrote it down. I can't remember where he was from, northern Wisconsin somewhere, and they had like 18 inches. And then ice goes on the lakes. And I'm just starting to get in ice data now, and it does confirm this, that it all happened about that time. Well, for one thing, the squirrels change. They get a winter coat that comes on right in conjunction with this. So if winter weather comes early, within a day or so, their change is quite astounding. They get a thicker coat of hair. It kind of turns the back reddish. It almost puts a red streak through the back. and the ears will develop larger hair, and the tips of their ears at times can look white. And for someone who's not really, who's never really looked at squirrels carefully before, to see that sometimes is quite astonishing. Not this November hunting season, but the hunting season beforehand, we had that cold snap reach into the state, and my best friend's boy was with us, and he thought that the gray squirrels had made it with the red squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
And he had asked me, he said, you know, can that happen? And I said, probably not, but what you just see is that the cold snap had hit, and this is what gray squirrels do, and some of them get that thick reddish hair.
Reddish
on the
hair,
back. And
yeah.
So that's just one phenomena, but kind of the fun stuff is kind of like my friend Golfin' John. He's a golf fanatic. He changes the way he plays golf. Right now, golf courses are letting players on the courses year-round, and if there's no snow cover, he's a fanatic. He goes out and golfs, and he says when you hit a golf ball in an approach shot with a 9-iron, it'll hit the green in a bounce just like it's on a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So he switches over, and for him, that's when winter starts. He has to hit that ball on a line drive and bounce it down the fairway and then have it roll up on the green. And he says he knows just when winter starts. It's when that phenomena takes place.
We're talking with Dennis Prusik of Green Bay, the publisher of the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin, a 31-year study of the wild animals and plants in the state. We have five of the calendars as a gift from Dennis, and we've given two of them away so far. We'll continue to take your calls in just a moment as we continue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Dennis Prusik about the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin. I understand that you've been able to hold the price to the same one you had last year.
Yes, calendar is still
$10. $10 and then a one-time shipping charge for 100 calendars?
Yes, and one-time shipping charge of
$2. $2. Mm-hmm. And so Dennis Prusik, P-R-U-S-I-K, and what address is that?
1701 9th Street, that's the number 9,
mm-hmm.
And that's Green Bay, and the zip code is 54304.
All right. Let's go back to the phones to Tekla next in Madison. Hello, Tekla.
Hello. I have a question regarding predatory birds. Mm-hmm. And when I was young growing up in the Madison area, I never saw a hawk or a falcon or an eagle or anything. And recently, in the past few years, we see them around Madison. I even saw a bald eagle over Lake Monona one day. Have these returned because there are healthier flocks or because we're encroaching on their territories?
Well, I think in a lot of respects, what you're seeing is a pretty steady buildup of predatory birds in the state, especially eagles. Eagles are a real success story. I may sound young, but I'm not. And as a 60-year-old, I remember as a boy in the Shawano area watching eagles circling over the outlet where I grew up all summer long, and they were there all winter long too, but in less numbers. But then with DDT and other pesticides affecting their eggs, predatory birds feed on a lot of smaller birds and would accumulate these pesticides. Their birthing rates just dropped and plummeted, and there wasn't any eagles at all for just years and years. And now over the last about decade and a half or so, eagles, excuse me, with the banning of these pesticides, their numbers have been building up nice, and you're starting to see them. Like I see them in the Shawano area, and I see them all winter long. In fact, just statewide now, the number of eagles there are building all over the state. And so now, even in northern Wisconsin, there are some eagles that remain over winter. And it's nice to hear that those and other hawks are building up their numbers in the Madison area, too.
Tekla, thank you so much for the call. We'll put you on hold so that Dave Potratz can get your information, and we'll get a calendar off to you. That's 3 out of 5 that have gone so far. Let's talk about another of the fun ways to measure the seasons.
Well, these are all personal to me, and I think, you know, looking at what makes an individual really think that the seasons have changed is what's fun. I have a friend from the Madison area, Kathy Miner, who's environmental teacher, and she tries to get kids to think seasonally in terms of what's personal and even create holidays that are personal. And so for me, the start of winter is very personal. I notice that when my wife, who's just a fantastic cook, starts cooking roast and pastas, these are dishes I haven't had for almost a year, because during the summertime we cook a lot lighter. And so for me, when my wife starts thinking of these heavier foods, that's a seasonal change for me. And I'm sure your listeners out there have similar things that they think of when winter comes or spring comes that, you know, maybe they'd like to share with us.
All right. And the number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address, talk@wpr.org. Dennis Prusik, our guest. And let's go to Dee Dee in Couderay next. Hello, Dee Dee.
Hi, Jim. Dennis, I wonder if in your investigations, if you have any idea what is it that triggers the leaves to start changing. I've noticed, like, up in the North Woods, it used to seem like always the second weekend in October was when it was really going to peak, but now it's sometimes it starts way early. Is it temperature? Is it amount of sunlight? Do you know?
How long ago was this that you noticed it was the second week?
You know, I'm thinking back in, most of the 80s, the early 90s. It just seems now sometimes it's a lot earlier, sometimes it's later, and I'm wondering what triggers it.
Well, I tell you, that's kind of a whole science in and of itself. I can't say that I'm really super knowledgeable about it, but it is something that I have kind of paid attention to. The reason I asked when you noticed this is because actually, I think it's about maybe 3 to 4 decades ago, Northern Wisconsin used to advertise and really promote heavily Colorama, and that used to be the last weekend of September. And they kind of stopped doing it because Colorama was kind of coming very unpredictably and usually quite a bit later. And that's what I've noticed, is that in the last decade or so, their peak color has come more like into the, just from the areas I've noticed, and of course where you measure from will be different, but that would be about the first weekend, and October would be about peak. And then every once in a while we would get much earlier. I can tell you a little bit about what change or causes trees to turn. It has to do with light, and it has to do, I think, light, it kind of gets the tree ready and kind of triggers it. I think temperature plays a lot, and I know precipitation and its overall health play a large role in tree turning. And you can especially notice this, that if it's been a tough spring or a tough previous winter on trees and they're really hurting, and maybe over summer there was a drought, you'll get a lot of trees that start to turn early, even the end of July into August, and their colors will be really weak, and the leaves will fall off. And you can even notice this in a healthy tree, where one limb will turn early, and the leaves will fall off, and that limb was probably injured in a storm or something like that. So the tree, when it turns, it's partially temperature, it's a lot about sunlight, the day's getting shorter, and it has a lot to do with health. So if you kind of watch, let's say, a tree in your yard, how it turns from year to year, you can kind of tell and relate it to the other trees around you that you've either got a healthier tree or one that's more unhealthy than the others, just by when it turns and then the brightness of the colors. If they're very dull and it turns early, you got a tree that's in trouble.
Dee Dee, I'm going to put you on hold, and you'll get a calendar, the 2010 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin. That's the fourth, and the fifth one, I believe, is going to go to Ellen in Wausau. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Yes, I'm a UWSB student focusing on environmental education, and I was interested in developing a unit for children, focusing on Elda Leopold and John Muir. And I was interested if your guest has any pointers when you're teaching children, you know, as far as how to make phonology entries and how perhaps his phonology entries have changed over time.
Well, I tell you what, that I had one at one time had quite a good correspondence with I can't remember her name. This is a lady in the northwestern part of the state, and she was homeschooling her children, and she was extremely interested in this, and so she wanted all the information I could give her. And I here's what I suggested to her. I suggested that, because she really wanted to get into it in detail and really have something they could study every day. And I said, get a high and low thermometer. And I said, one thing you can have them do every day is with a high and low thermometer, and of course she's homeschooling pretty much year-round, is that every day they can record the high and low temperature. And then they can compute the average temperature. You add the two together and divide by two. And then they can chart it. They can make a chart. And then you can kind of see how the seasons flow by temperature in Wisconsin. You'll see that often the edges between winter, when temperatures are predominantly, the average is predominantly freezing, starts to meld into when those average temperatures get above, and now you're into the spring thaw. Some years it'll start, and then it'll go back into winter, and then it'll come back. And some years it'll come very abruptly. And so you can kind of see how each year has a unique fingerprint. Other ways is there are some efforts phonology-wise through the Internet, and especially around the monarch butterfly, which, as you probably know, goes through many life cycles on its trip down to Mexico and then back into the United States. And they have school kids following it, and as it advances northward, and you can punch into that website, and then, you know, your own students and that can follow it also. And I'm sure there's probably, on the web, there's probably a lot of good information on how to get children involved in phonology studies.
One would be the Operation Migration, where they would be able to follow birds going to Florida and then returning in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Did Alda Leopold, was he a phonologist? Did he keep his records too?
Yes, he did. In fact, the Sand County Almanac is a writing of phonology. He kind of advances the seasons by what plants and animals are doing, and he kept detailed records of this, and I know that his children have kept up through the Nature Center there, that just north of Madison, that they still continue to keep some of the records, and most of these, I believe, are plant records.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Ellen, we'll get you a calendar. The fifth of the five that we're able to provide today is a gift from Dennis Prusik. And for those of you who didn't win one and would like one, they're $10 a piece, plus a one-time shipping charge of $2 for one or 10 or how many ever you want to order. Dennis Prusik, P-R-U-S-I-K, 1701 9th Street, Green Bay, 54304. And I suppose you got plans for 2011 already.
Yes, I do. in fact, I've been gathering my information and checking it twice.
Okay. Let's go to Dave in Wisconsin Rapids next. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dennis. And I was hoping you'd be able to find six of those calendars. But just a couple of things, bits of information that I picked up over the years. One of them I'm sure that I heard on public radio, Dennis, it may even have been you, but it was an observation that at this latitude that the seasons advance and retard at approximately 10 to 11 miles per day, so that here in Wisconsin Rapids, we would be roughly eight days or so behind Madison as far as warming temperatures in the spring for planting and things like that. And that kind of jives with what my grandfather told me years ago. This would be back in the 40s. My grandfather was born in the old country in the late 19th century, and he said that you planted corn when the oak leaves were the size of a squirrel's ear.
Right.
And of course, that would change with your advance and your latitude. And one other observation that I'm not sure if it has to do with our warming, global warming or whatever we want to call that. But when I was a boy, back in the 40s, I had only ever seen an opossum in photographs. And opossums have become quite common, even as far north as Wisconsin Rapids, in recent years. And that's also true of vultures. When I was a boy, we would never see a vulture. The only time you saw those were in pictures, and they were circling a dead cow somewhere down in Texas or Arizona or somewhere. And I'm wondering if that observation is, might be because of the changing temperatures and so forth.
Yeah, those are all great observations and right on. And they put it this way: they are not conclusive proofs, but they are consistent with global warming. And there's been so many expansion northward of species. For example, cardinals, which many decades ago were a rare sighting even in Madison. And now, during the course of my study over the last 31 years, I've had people in northern Wisconsin, as you follow it year by year, talk about first seeing their first cardinal, and then cardinal sightings becoming more and more common as the species expands northward. Possum is another good example of that. Also, I've been trying to follow the tension line between a summer plant of purple loosestrife, which is an invasive species, and fireweed, and they both tend to blossom at the same time. But they tend to have a tension line that is a spot in kind of where south of that you mostly see purple loosestrife, and north of it you mostly see fireweed, and I've been trying to follow that, and there's some evidence that that is moving northwards also.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Hello.
I seem to have lost the connection here, Jim.
Hello? Oh, Bob.
Oh, this is Bob. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we're still on air.
Oh, I'm on air now, apparently.
Well, evidently, I don't hear Jim anymore. Jim, are you there?
Oh, well, then I'll just ask you my question.
There I am. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
My question was, I live in northern Wisconsin between Rhinelander and Eagle River, and we used to get large flocks of I don't know, I can't remember what they are.
Evening grosbeaks.
Evening grosbeaks, right, and pine grosbeaks.
Oh, sure.
And now last year there were hardly any, and this year there haven't been any yet so far this year. Are they a migratory bird that come down later, or are they changing patterns, or they just seem to have disappeared?
Well, I tell you what, some of these bird species, and other species too, kind of like butterflies, When you get a species number in which there's not a great many of them, you can get these real wild swings from where they are year to year. The evening grosbeak, I'm kind of surprised that you haven't seen many of them, because last year was a pretty good year for most of my observers in seeing evening grosbeaks. So maybe I can only surmise that where you were, something changed locally. And I've noticed that same phenomena with butterflies. Some years, you know, I'm always looking for butterflies in the summer, and I'm just not seeing them. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, where are they? And maybe just a county over, they're seeing lots of them. So sometimes there is this phenomena in which the species is spreading out inconsistently throughout the state, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure why that is.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the call. I know that a portion of the proceeds from the sale of the calendars benefits the Wisconsin Land Fund. Talk about the fund and what it's used for.
Well, the fund, the Wisconsin Land Fund, is an endowment that I started when I started this calendar project 31 years ago. And when I first did it, I did it through the Audubon Society here out of Green Bay. And we started the an endowment with it right away, so that when we made some money, we had a place to put it, and that place was an endowment that was eventually going to build to be big enough where it could help start saving some of our wild land. I think most people would agree in Wisconsin that our wild places are disappearing at an alarming rate. And so I've continued that now that I'm doing the calendar on my own. Some of the money that I make every year gets put into the Wisconsin Land Fund. And it's an endowment that once a year we contact the 55-plus land trusts that are in the state of Wisconsin and ask them if they're fundraising, and to send us an email describing what land it is they're trying to save. And we're trying to save land that has, especially land that's near water and land that's saving endangered species. The reason we like to save land that's wild, land that's near water, is because it also helps our groundwater table. It helps clarify our rivers and our streams and all those other good things besides the habitat for a wildlife that is kind of disappearing.
Dennis, I've got to stop here because we've run out of time. For people who would like to get the calendar, it's $10 plus a $2 shipping charge.
Yes.
And make a check out to?
To Dennis Prusik.
P-R-U-S-I-K.
Yeah.
And the address?
1701 9th Street, Green Bay, 54304.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Thanks so much.
We appreciate your willingness to participate and the gift of the five calendars that we will send out to our listeners. And we thank you very much for being with us today. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer. Coming up in just a minute or so, we'll be talking about Native story, song, and spirit with storyteller Deborah Morningstar here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.